Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 85 of Season 5 Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2 Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off this week is Lisa Leahy.
Yeah,
did I get it right this time?
There we go.
Oh, okay,
you
good.
You did. Well done.
From the Rabbit Hole Podcast Network, welcome back, Lisa.
Thank you. I'm so glad I made it through the week.
Yeah, me too. Me too. I'm very glad. You know, you gave me some interesting
I'm
things
not
over
sure
the
I'm,
week. To...
I mean, by the time I get to bedtime tonight, you know, after my first, you know, real week with kids, I may not make it too well, but I made it with you anyway.
Well, just think about it from the perspective, you know, that you get to talk about Die Hard too.
There it is. See?
Who cares about having to deal with the kids? You know, come on.
Nah. Trust me, there's a reason I'm an English teacher. I can talk about all the books and movies I want and just be a nerd and get paid for it. It's a beautiful thing.
There you go. That's right. See, I like doing all those things for free. So
yeah.
I don't know what that means about me. I don't know what that says. You know, if I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing that I prefer to do it for free. You know, I'm of the impression that if I'm doing it for free, then, you know, I get to choose how I'm doing it and when I'm doing it and things like that, as opposed to feeling an obligation to do it.
That is a good call. That is a good call. I mean, I have, you know, that formal curriculum and certain things I'm supposed to teach, but every now and then I go off on a bit of a tangent. You might have noticed some of that from my podcast guesting.
You? You? No, come on. Come on.
It's very atypical.
No, I don't think
so. It never happens when I work either.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. No, so minute 80. That's right. So minute 85 begins with John seeing Baker in the distance and ends with Barnes phoning a friend.
Yes. Yes.
So, I mean, basically we left things on, you know, yesterday where we were talking about, you know, how many of the houses are, you know, celebrate Christmas and how many don't.
Yep.
And things like that, you know, the script confirmed it. You know, we
Thank
had a little bit of help there. Thank goodness for the Goldsteins, you know.
We would have just been stuck with our own suppositions, and gosh, we never would have known, and thankfully the script helped us seal that mystery.
So that's good.
So, we'll never have to wonder,
you know,
again.
We will never have to worry and wonder again, because, you know, we're going to have to find out what John's going to be doing dealing with Baker now, somehow. I don't know. Don't know. We'll have to wait and see.
Yep.
So basically, you know, John and Barnes decided that they're going to get a little closer. They're going to go check out the church area. And while they decide to do this, you know, they see a man out for a walk, you know, and, you know, then John says, could be a sentry. And then Barnes goes, well, he could just be out for a walk. And he says, then why is he going over his own footsteps? Which I got to say is a great catch, because, you know, you're just looking at somebody walking and you're not really paying any attention to how he's walking. I mean, we can't see from the video ourselves, you know, that they are walking, that Baker is apparently walking over his own footsteps. You know,
right.
You think that he wouldn't be that careful about this type of thing.
Well,
just being out for a walk.
I wondered if it was a matter of him literally walking over his own footsteps, or was he simply pacing? And for some reason, that was the way it was described.
Do you think pacing, or if he just stays in the same, you know, he's going in the same pattern?
That's what I'm wondering. Like, is he literally, because you think somebody going back and forth in their own footsteps means they're trying to hide the fact that they're there, but if he's some sort of sentry,
well, they're
trying
to hide their numbers, you know, like sand people do.
Okay,
like
so
sand
that
people
makes
do.
More sense. Sand people. See, there we go. Back to the Star Wars stuff, right?
That's
see,
right.
In my brain, I go right to the dink dinks, which is really not what most Star Wars people.
Okay,
want
the dink
dinks.
The dink dinks is Spaceballs, so that's close enough. You know, it's fine.
I can't help it. I'm sorry. But yeah, no, that's an interesting point. Because if they're trying to hide how many of them there are, then just kind of willy-nilly going back and forth wouldn't do them any good. Okay, so that makes more sense. I appreciate the explanation for me.
Right, because I mean, when you go back to the analogy that I just brought with the sand people, so when in the first Star Wars movie, which is now dubbed The New Hope, right? So you have the whole idea where they're wondering whether it was the sand people who attacked Luke's aunt and uncle or not, and then so Obi-Wan was basically saying that the sand people travel, they have their Banthas walk one after the other to hide their number. And when stormtroopers, pretend to be sand people, they don't do that. So, that's what it comes down to.
That
So
makes
is
sense.
Baker trying to hide his numbers or just hiding the fact that he is the same person walking around, So, I don't know. We're never really going to find that out because,
No. Unless
And
that's also in the script, but I find that unlikely because
not at all.
they're
We'll
not
have to wait
actors
until we
going to
get
do
there at
so.
the end, at the end of today's episode. We will get there towards the end,
Okay.
and then we get John and Barnes. They both crouch by a car, and then John turns to him and goes, "Come on, all right, just stay here and get ready to call the Marines." And then Barnes looks at him and goes, "I thought they were the army." And he goes, "Who gives a f? Just be ready."
What difference does that make? It is kind of wonderful.
Yeah, it's basically showing John's disdain for them, for Grant and all
Yeah.
his men and stuff like that. Like, he doesn't really care. It
Yeah,
doesn't really
no,
make a
and
difference if it's
that's
the army or the Marines.
bring a bunch of people here. We're going to need them. It
That's right. Bring
doesn't
them.
matter who the
But
hell they
what's interesting is he still wants them to show up.
are. Right.
That's the whole thing. If he is obviously he's not really suspicious of Grant, but if he doesn't believe that Grant is necessarily there for the right reasons, so I can sort of understand why he wouldn't necessarily want them to be there, but I guess he realizes that inevitably he needs to call them in.
Right.
Even if he doesn't need them, because in the end they need to be there in order to possibly finish things off.
Right, for
I
sure.
don't know.
Well, the other thing is that, well, I mean, McClane, as much as he knows he's right, he's not one of these, egotistical guys in charge who are like, oh, I'm the one who can do all of this. Like, despite the fact that he has proven more than once now that he can take an entire team of people, he prefers not to, which I have to say is good thinking on his part, because I would prefer not to take on, a whole army of people myself either. I would prefer to have
Well, you're
backup.
not John McClane. Come on.
This is very true. I mean, I don't know. I
You
feel
might
like
sometimes
he's
act like
tired.
John McClane, but you are not John
I might have John McClane's mouth, yes. I may sometimes have
McClane.
that kind of sarcasm and stuff. I do need to work on my yell, though. He does have that wonderful John McClane yell that he uses.
It's very possible.
Yes.
John cocks his gun and gets up and starts moving towards the church. He's crouching over a little bit as he's doing it. He's doing it in a stealthily manner. And then he gets to like a fence, which is a typical white picket fence.
Yes. Well, it is a
And
nice
he
suburban neighborhood.
and we see that he's about to try and climb over that fence. Now, what do you know about white picket fences?
I know that it's that, quintessential suburban house kind of thing. I know that there was a TV show starring Tom Skerritt in what the around this time called Picket Fences, some kind of
Yeah,
drama something
it
or other.
started I think in 92. It was a drama about the goings on in this small little I think it was a New England town.
Yeah,
It was
the kind of thing that I would be all over
Cindy Pickett.
today.
I love that show. It was a great show.
It was it I was I wasn't I for whatever reason it wasn't in my wheelhouse at the time. I was still kind of young. I was, junior high at that point, so it wasn't quite my wheelhouse, but I think it's definitely something I would be very into today. In fact, I should probably look that up. See if I can
Yeah,
find it.
you can probably track it down somewhere.
Yeah.
Okay. And so do you know anything about the history of picket fences, of like when
I
they started being
don't.
used and stuff like that? No.
I don't. I mean, what kind of fence was Tom Sawyer painting? Did he help out with that, Mark Twain? Could be. I don't remember if he was painting a picket fence.
I think it was. I think it was. So a picket fence is a type of fence often used decoratively for domestic boundaries, distinguished by their evenly spaced vertical boards, which are known as pickets, attached to horizontal rails. Picket fences are particularly popular in the U.S., with the white picket fence coming to symbolize the ideal middle-class suburban life. Okay, this style has been used since the earliest colonial era and
wow.
still is popular today. So, again, we're talking 247 years. Wow.
Impressive.
Yeah. That's right. Pickets were historically sharpened logs used to defend positions and used as such by early colonists. Now they're used in a decorative way to contain pets and children without blocking views.
Yes.
And they're used in both front and backyards. They're typically made out of wood and painted white, or sometimes whitewashed. But nowadays, they're mostly, you know, you people buy them with low maintenance PVC or vinyl and stuff like that.
No whitewashing there.
Yeah.
We don't need Tom Sawyer sitting out in the yard neglecting his duties. If it already comes taken care of, we don't need to hire some neighborhood kid to not do the work.
That's very true. So John, you know, gets towards the fence and we're waiting for him to basically jump over it. And then the shot changes because they do a great editing job at this minute. You know, the shot changes and we see someone dialing a phone and we can easily tell that it is Holly. Mm-hmm. Did you try to see what number she's dialing?
I didn't. I tend to just let that pass for whatever reason.
Yeah, and I was just curious if they, you know, would have her, you know, type in any particular type of phone number or something like that.
Right.
And we actually see it. She presses the green button, which I guess is the send button, and then she dials 459-4581. So she sort of forgets to put in a area code.
Yeah, from the air.
That's right. So, you know, John has the international, you know, number of 459-4581.
I love it. I just love that it's a pager. Like, it's just, it's funny to me. So you look at the
That's
tech
right.
now and, it, you know, as he's running, you know that, oh, God. As soon as you have that jump cut to Holly on the plane, you're like, oh, this is going to be great timing. But,
right. Exactly.
Yeah, you forget.
And then
it's
we
like,
see...
it's not a cell phone. We're watching it now and you think, oh, you know, the cell phone is going to ring. And it's like, oh, wait, no.
That's right. And you know, I'm, if I remember correctly, you can put a beeper on vibrate also, but he didn't at the
Definitely.
Time.
Definitely. No.
And, you know, then we see John on the other side of the fence and he starts moving and then his beeper goes off and
Just
he like
goes over.
That's right. And he stops in the middle and tries to shut off the beeper. And then he looks up and as he's looking up, Baker has a flying leap towards him.
He does.
You know, and like pulls him really, you know, like pushes him really far. You know, and the music changes here. It's very intense music the way that they do this.
This is the music from when Hans Gruber is falling from the Nakatomi Tower. You know, it's interesting because this is that exact music. And I'm like, okay, so we're going that intense for this particular moment. Like, this isn't the climax of the story or anything. And, you know, just having seen that movie so many times, like, that music is very particular to me. And I'm like, what is this?
Right, I mean, it's also Michael Kamen. Michael Kamen did the music for both.
Which
so
is
that makes sense.
Wonderful, but I think reusing it here, I don't know. I mean, maybe later on, but now is not the climax of the movie. Why would you bring it back here?
Well, I actually look at it from a different perspective. I say that it's actually a great idea that they use it now because it's the idea that they're basically saying, okay, you know, we're going to outdo the previous movie. And by outdoing the previous movie, you know, we're going to first... We're going to use the climactic music from the first one at a point that is not there yet.
Interesting.
Meaning
you have
to get high. I mean, that's the way I look at it. You have to
I think that's
get
totally
to
fair.
A higher level in order to do that.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's the way
intrigued.
I look at it.
That's an interesting perspective. I like it.
I'm glad that I'm able to intrigue you.
You've been intriguing me all week, Rob. This has always been a great time.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? Okay, so we mentioned beepers. What do you know about beepers?
I know that it took me forever to get one. My parents eventually did conceive and gave me one. I know there was absolutely no reason for me to
why
have
did
one,
you
but
need,
being a child.
Why did you need, I was going to say, why did you need a beeper? The only people who had beepers that were children are drug dealers.
That's just it. Doctors and drug dealers, and you are neither. I don't know. It's just one of those stupid things. But I mean, it's funny because we would text people each other. We would text. Yep. Yeah, that was hard. Sentences don't work for me. We would text each other through it. You know, you would send little messages with codes based on where the letters were on the numbers. So it's like, you know, you would text each other with the original, what was it, T9 or whatever that code was before we could actually text properly. But like, we would actually send each other messages through the beeper using that. So that's all I got. I don't have actual history of it. I just have my stupid
Oh
use of
wow!
it. Oh yeah.
You see, I never had a beeper. Had the need for it.
Yeah. It was
Because
just that early way of
I
people
am
getting
neither a
hold of you.
doctor nor a drug dealer.
Right.
So yeah.
Neither was I, but apparently that's what we did in the 90s. We're like, oh, need
Yeah,
my
apparently.
pager so that people can get a hold of me. But I mean, it was good if your parents needed you or whatever. It was just that those early days of having a way to get a hold of you when they needed you.
Right. That's true. Now, do you know other names for a beeper?
I know beeper and pager, and I
Correct.
don't think I have
Okay.
anything other than that.
The other one is a bleeper.
I've
I've
never
never
heard
heard
that.
that before.
No, I haven't
Never heard it
either.
before. And did you know that they have two types of pagers? They have the ones that are one-way pagers, which you can only receive messages on, and then you have other ones where you can actually write back. You know, two-way pagers. You can
I mean,
acknowledge, reply, you know, things like that.
I guess like the early days of, you know, texting, I would expect.
That's true. When do you think pagers were developed?
Oh gosh, my gut says the early 80s, but it's probably more the 70s.
It's the 50s. It was the
Get
1950s that it
out. They're
was.
that old. They had drug
And
dealers in the
obviously,
50s?
apparently, the middle eye, right? So that was not the middle eye, right? Isn't that what it's called?
Oh, I'm not sure. That's not a term I know.
Come on, Billy Joel. Children of the middle eye.
Sorry. I do like my Billy Joel, but apparently I've fallen into the
Yeah.
failure zone here.
Correct. So basically, the first pagers were created in 1950 for doctors in New York. They basically would pay a fee of $12 a month, and they were able to receive messages as long as they were within 25 miles of the transmitter tower.
Interesting.
Yeah. Then, in 1962, it started, they expanded their use and things like that. Eventually, it went to Motorola, and Motorola actually stopped manufacturing pagers in 2001.
Yeah.
And I mean, nowadays nobody uses them.
No, I mean, not really. You don't need them.
That's right. They're very obsolete these days. But the idea is a great idea, from back then, about
Yeah.
how one, that you can just, leave someone a message and say that they need to call you back. That's pretty much it.
Yeah. It's like get to me and, you know, find a phone somewhere. It's easy to get to a phone. Nowadays, that would be trickier, I think.
Well, nowadays everyone just has a phone, so you don't have to worry about that.
Right, but what if you're found without one? I mean, my goodness. Most people are not willing to just sort of turn over their cell phone to a stranger on the street, and it's hard to get pay phones and stuff. I mean, at this point, I
Right.
think if you found yourself in an emergency situation, you'd have to find a business and like find their landline.
Right. It's true. So, yeah, well, I guess it's a good thing that we don't have to worry about those anymore.
Yes, thank goodness.
Sorry. This intense music starts, and John and Baker start fighting, and then the shot changes, and we get to see Barnes taking out a phone, which again is a huge. Huge cell phone. And
Is it a satellite phone, that one? I can't remember.
yes,
Okay.
we established earlier on that this is a satellite phone.
Yes, okay.
For obvious reasons, it makes
Right.
sense.
That's all we have
And
access to.
that's right. And then we see that Barnes types in the 01 and then send. And then it flips back to get another few seconds of John and Baker, brawling on the side there.
Yes.
And then we're back to Barnes, who's on the phone, and he goes, Lorenzo. And then he gets cut off. So people are gonna have to come back on Monday to actually find out what he
We
wants
gotta
to
wait a
say
whole
to
weekend for
Lorenzo.
this. My
That's right.
goodness.
That's right. Just go into hibernation sleep and you'll be fine. You won't
See,
even notice.
that's, I can do that. That I can manage.
All right. So you have anything else for this minute or the movie in general before we get into the script?
No, I think it's good. I think we covered it pretty well.
I definitely agree. I think we did also. So the script says Baker is walking almost casually around the rear of the house. McLean and Barnes huddle, whisper, could be a sentry. And he could just be out for a walk. Then why is he going over his own footprints?
Oh, there it is.
Indeed, Baker's steady progress has made a trench around the church property, and the distinctive print of his galoshes now makes double images. McLean says, stay here. Get ready to call the Marines. I thought they were army. Who the f cares? Just be ready. Saying this, McLean takes his own gun from his holster and puts it in the back of his trousers, then moves on. Barnes takes out a cellular phone, lurks under a tree. McLean moves from shadow to shadow and tree to tree like an Indian stalking a settler.
Oh,
What a
that's classy. You're
description.
not gonna get that description anymore. Good grief. Shouldn't
No,
have gotten it
not
then.
at all. That's right. Closer, closer. Holly and then says, a shot of Holly on the plane. Holly drops her credit card in the airphone, starts to dial. Baker's only a yard away. Closer, closer, and then beep. Baker instantly whips his head around, the hidden MAC-10 coming up, but the winter outerwear slows him. McLean dives on him. So it's interesting that in the script, McLean jumps on him as opposed to Baker jumping on McLean. Barnes reacts, begins to dial the phone, and then it says the dial reads no service. Barnes says, shit. He raises the antenna, realizing he's got to move, runs towards the street. McLean and Baker crash into the fence with a crack. McLean has Baker's gun hand and slams it down on the splintered fence. Again, blood wells. The gun drops. Baker rolls, taking McLean away from the weapon. They trade brutal punches. The church, and just through the rear window here, we see the fence give and bend again, and the sound is muffled by the wind in the glass. So they like, basically give us a shot through the window of John and Baker fighting, and that's how things end for this minute.
Ooh, interesting. Much more. Well, I mean, it's pretty intense in the movie as well, but a little bit extra there in the script.
Yeah, it's a little extra. I mean, basically next week we will begin with the whole idea of we'll continue with their fight. So you have to come back next week to find out what happens in this fight.
It's like you did that deliberately. Did you like plan this week
Me?
out to land on a cliffhanger like this?
No, not me. I don't do that. That's Rennie Harland and the editor did that because
Fine.
they knew 33 years ago that someone was going to be doing this movie minute by minute, and they said, let's screw them up
I
and
mean,
keep them on cliffhangers just about every week.
totally. I mean, Rennie Harlan knew that there's certain shots needed to be in the trailer. He totally saw in advance that podcasts were going to be doing minute by minutes for him.
That's right. That's right. And I'm glad, works
Yes,
well for us.
it does. I'm a
Works
fan.
very well for us. Yeah. So every Friday we have a segment called Where Are They Up To This Weekend?
Oh.
Which Lisa's probably wondering what this is all about.
I'm
And
very intrigued.
basically this is a segment that I decided to do in order to test my guests' memories
Oh
a
boy.
little bit. Okay,
Okay.
so because Lisa doesn't do a Movies by Minute podcast, so I asked her for her three favorite movies,
Yes.
and now we're going to find out how well she knows those movies. In order to try and figure out, we now have finished 85 minutes of this movie, so we're at the hour and 25 minute mark.
Okay.
So, okay, now I want to see if Lisa can figure out where her favorite movies are up to at the hour and 25 minute mark.
Oh, fun. I like this. I was wondering why you wanted those
Okay,
movies. I'm like,
there you
it
go.
changes all the time. But okay, here's what they are today.
Okay,
Cool.
that's fine. We'll do. Okay, so we're going to start off with The Exorcist.
Yes.
Okay, what do you think is going on? And obviously, I take it all. You get a little bit of leeway here, because there are different versions of the movies and things like that. So, where do you think The Exorcist is up to at the 85-minute mark? What do you think is going on?
Oh, let me think. So I'm kind of going through the film in my head at this point. So by now, Reagan is definitely possessed. We've gotten past all of the medical stuff. But I don't know yet if Father Merrin has entered the picture. because that's more of the climax of the film. So I think we're still dealing with Damien Karras working on this. I'm going to go with, this is probably about where Damien Karras is seeing visions of his mother and seeing visions of the demon Pazuzu taunting him about not caring for his mother. Last days. Not even close.
I can't say if you're close or not, but what is going on in this scene is when, you know, he says to the possessed Reagan, "Show me Reagan and I'll loosen one of the straps." And then the response is, "Do you want to leave a message?"
I love it. Oh, and then you know what? Right. He does. Oh, that's funny. And the demon does bring up his mother in that scene. Yes, kindly loosen the straps, the demon says.
That's right.
Oh, that's a good one. Right. Okay, yeah, see, that is pretty early on, but yeah. Interesting.
Well, I mean, there's only 47 minutes left of the movie after this point.
But right. I knew we were past the halfway point.
Yeah, we're definitely past the halfway point. Okay, the next one we're going to go to is Primal Fear, which, because you mentioned this, I actually went and rewatched it today.
Oh, it's so good.
So I have it fresh in my mind, too. So what is going on at the 85-minute mark in Primal Fear?
Oh, gosh. They're in the courtroom by now. Trial has definitely begun. I'm going to say this is the point when... shame on me. I can't remember his name. Oh, I can't remember Richard Gere's character's name. I'm going to say this
Martin,
is when...
Martin.
Oh, God. Marty.
Martin Vale.
Thank you. God, shame on... I have to go watch this again. I'm going to say this is when he's visiting Aaron's hometown.
No, he hasn't gotten there yet.
Okay.
This is the point where he actually finds out that, you know, he's debating what he's going to do about the fact that Aaron has a... that Aaron and Roy are both there.
So is he in the interrogation room on that scene?
He's in the interrogation room.
Oh,
it's right after the interrogation room.
Interesting. Okay. So he had that whole shock scene.
Yes. Yes. Very now, cool. Have you read the novel?
Yes.
Okay. So it's I fantastic. Read the novel before this movie came out. And
oh, it's, that's
William,
cool.
William Dial, Deal? I don't know how
it's
pronounced.
Yeah, I've always said Deal, but yeah, same guy.
Okay. So I loved the book. I thought it was amazing. And I got to say, when I first saw the movie, I was very disappointed because the last line of the book is changed in the movie. By one word.
One word.
One word. In the movie, word? In the movie, we have Aaron say, or Roy say, maybe there really was no. Oh, no, he says there
he
was
says there
no.
There never was an Aaron.
There never was. In the book, it's maybe there never was.
Oh, okay. So he's being slick in the book.
And the book, leaving it very ambiguous.
Mm-hmm.
It, to me, was just even more powerful than definitively saying that, you know, the line in the movie.
Right.
Even though Edward Norton does a great job here. There's no question. And when I rewatched it today, I was amazed how amazing the entire cast is.
Yes. It's absolutely
all the people. I mean, you have Laura Linney, John Mahoney, Alfre Woodard, Frances McDormand, Edward Norton, Terry O'Quinn, which yes. I've only... you know, now start recognizing him in all the movies that he was in, you know, before Lost, I never knew who he was, you know,
mm-hmm.
Andre Brower, Stephen Bauer, Joe Spano, Maura Tierney.
Yes.
And obviously Richard Gere. I mean, it's just such a great cast. No
and it's the film that changed my mind on, you know, courtroom films. Before then, I always insisted. I'm like, courtroom movies are boring. I don't want to see it. My friends literally forced me, you know, like, oh, we're all hanging out. We're going to watch a movie. What are we watching? This thing. I don't want to watch that. I was like adamant. And they were like, no, this is what we're watching. And then, you know, as the ending comes up, they watched me watch the ending because they knew. It's like, you know, my jaw hit the floor and it was like, oh, this is good. Wow. This is very good. But, you know, I obviously this is the movie where I discovered Edward Norton, huge favorite of mine since. And it's interesting that you mention like that specific ending to the book, which I haven't read more than once. And there's a series that follows Roy. Like, this character continues
Oh,
in
I
other
didn't know that.
books. So if it would been, yeah, if it been a standalone, and I'm sure Deal didn't anticipate, you know, like the movie, and then I don't know when the decision was made to continue writing these books. I don't know if it was a Thomas Harris kind of thing. It's like, you know, the movie became so big that he decided to keep going the way,
Right.
you know, he did with Hannibal Lecter, and the quality obviously dropped from there. But had that been a standalone and stayed that way, that ending would be much more impactful. But I think me coming to it later and now knowing that there were more books makes that less useful, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, interesting.
Interesting. I haven't read any of the other books because I don't care for series in books. I just want to read a standalone and move on. But
Yeah, no, I completely understand that one for sure.
so,
Interesting.
such a good one.
Yeah.
Love
Yeah,
it.
it's really good. All right. So now we will go to your final movie, which, as far as I know,
Oh, see, this is gonna kill me when I get it
as far
wrong.
as I know, this is your the movie that you always talk
This
about.
is it.
So
This has always been, this has been my favorite movie since like high school. Like, this has never
all
changed.
right. So
Ask me for a top five, you know, two through five are going to change, but one never will.
okay, Ghostbusters is always on top there. So what is going on in Ghostbusters at the 85-minute mark?
I don't know. let me think. It's got to be toward the end. I don't think this is a, I don't even know how long
There are
Ghostbusters is. Isn't that awful?
there's 19 minutes left in the movie after this.
Yeah, I was gonna say this is pretty close to the end for an 80s comedy. This is not gonna be some 2.5 hour thing. So at the 85 minute mark, I'm going to go with, this is when they're in Dana Barrett's apartment and Ray asks, "Hey, where do these stairs go?" And Venkman answers, "They go up."
Well, you are definitely there. You're at the right point because they're on the top of the building, and they see the stairs going up, and then we have
Get out. Am I really that
you
close?
are really that close.
I'm so proud of me. Yay. I can keep my title as Ghostbusters nerd. As I sit here, like a friend of mine, there's a guy on Etsy who does these little tapes. He takes VHS tapes. I'm showing Rob on screen because obviously you at home can't see it. But he takes VHS tapes and he makes like these little nostalgic things. There's actually lights in where the tape would actually be. And so I have my Ghostbusters VHS tape light sitting over here with the clamshell case that it came in. So I need to make sure that I'm doing my movie justice. And I'm so glad I got that right. I would have been very sad if I was far off.
Well, again, there are different versions of it, so you could have been
Yeah.
closer, or you could have been further away, depending on
True.
the whole thing. But yeah.
I did need the hint. I did need the hint of how much was left in the movie, though, but
Really?
that's okay.
No, come on. I trust you enough.
I wasn't certain. Thank you.
All right, so thank you. That was great. I hope you had fun doing that.
Absolutely.
All right. So, Lisa, why don't you, for the final time this week, tell everyone where they can find Lisa Leahy. Leahy. Leahy.
Oh, there it
Leahy.
is. It's gone.
Leahy.
Late. It's
Leahy.
gone.
Leahy. Leahy. Leahy.
Keep all of that in. so you can
Keep all that
see
in to make me
Lisa.
look like
You
an idiot. Thank you.
I know it's just funny that by the end of the week, no, see, this is perfect. First week of school, we're still trying to get everybody's names and we're still screwing it up. And even though we write down the phonetic pronunciation, we're still messing it
Which I
up. And
did.
it's this is the
I
nature of the
wrote it
beast.
down
Oh, yeah.
Laye.
Yep. Nope. Still can't do it.
Wait,
It's
do
okay.
kids in school call you Miss Leahy, or is it informal and they just call you Lisa? How does that work these days?
No, they don't call me Lisa. They may yell Leahy at me without the Ms., Mrs., which is fine, but it's not. So my maiden name is Passanelli. And so I was Pass pretty much through the entirety of my career until I got married. And even now, there are people who will still call me Pass. I'm like, I'm Pass. I'll absolutely be Pass for the rest of my life. But with Leahy, there really isn't any way to shorten it. So they just kind of call me by the full name. So the formal kids, the ones whose parents have drilled it into them, will very formally call me Mrs. Leahy. But a lot of times it's just Leahy, I need you. Come here.
No,
I'm
but
like,
like,
okay.
what's the school
So.
policy on how pupils are supposed to refer to their teachers? When I was in school, it was Mr., it was Mrs., there was,
Yes, still.
and I know that my kids are much more informal with their teachers, and I can't understand.
And they call him by first name?
Well, my kids' friends will come over and call me by my first name, and it's like, instead of
Oh, you by your
that
first
too,
name.
no, I'm saying, I think it's a generational thing, because when I grew up, all of my parents'
Huh.
friends were Mr. this, Mr. Mrs. that, it was a very respectful way to do it, and nowadays,
Right.
I don't know.
I think it also depends on the person. So, like, you'll have kids who do it. I don't know any teacher in the building who's nobody's going by their first name. I had a student teacher who, like, if it was me, she asked the kids to call her like Miss Lisa. So she used her first name with the Miss. So that was it's you still had that respectful honorarium there. And then I know there was this whole push for a while where kids would call you either Miss or Mister, and you'd have some people who would get offended by that because they weren't using their actual name. And I was like, look, there's a lot worse they could call you.
That
You
is
know,
true
and
also.
they would get offended because they're like, I have a name, use it. But it was still a respectful honorarium. It was still a way for them to show. It was a way of shortening it because they wouldn't call you Leahy. They would just be like Miss. It was just a shortened way to get your attention. I don't know. I think some of it has to do with the diverse cultures we have in my building, and it has shifted a little bit. But I don't know. It's an interesting kind of setup, I think, because I think there's a respectful familiarity when they just call you by your last name. And by calling me pass and whatever. I mean, we're a building, and as a teacher, it's something I like to foster, like that comfort and that respect. But obviously still the teacher-student boundary, if that
Right.
makes
Yeah, of
sense.
course it is.
So I don't need, people sitting at their desks with their hands folded and speak only when spoken to. We don't play that game anymore.
Right. No, but it just you still need the respect. That's what it comes down to.
Totally. Yeah, growing up, I mean, all of my parents, my friends' parents were either mom or dad. It was like we were this very close-knit group of people and we were always at each other's houses. And so it was just everybody's mom was mom, everybody's dad was dad. It was just easier.
Okay. Makes it easier. You don't have to remember, everyone's names.
Well, because none of us were ever comfortable. I mean, my childhood best friend, we've been friends since second grade, still has trouble calling my mother by her first name.
And I can understand
So, and
that.
my mother is constantly correcting me.
I
Yeah.
can understand that. Again, but I think it's a generational thing. I think it's what it comes down to.
It is.
All right, great. I already asked you to give your plugs, all right? I'm trying to remember.
I don't remember if I actually
Oh,
got through
okay.
them. We got
That's what
distracted
I think
today,
so
but
too.
I'll do them
Okay.
again.
So Lisa, why don't you tell people where they can.
Oh, it's because you mispronounced
Ah,
my
that's right.
name.
There you go. So
Okay,
Lisa,
so anyway, see,
why don't you
tangent.
tell people how they can get in touch with you? Lisa
All
Leahy.
right, so you can find me. That's the one. You can find me on the Rabbit Hole Podcast Network. You can find us at rabbitholepodcasts.com. And I am on Between the Scares, a podcast on which Jason Soto and I are working our way through every film that Jason Blum and Blumhouse Productions have put out into the world, for better or for worse. There's also Pictures and Conversations, which is a Rabbit Hole Podcast book club. We put out new episodes on the 20th of every month. And I just my general shenanigans of guesting on other people's podcasts. So you never know where I may turn up.
Okay, that's good. That's fun. All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Around Minute. You can find me on Facebook, you can find me on Twitter, or you can find me on my website, movearoundminute.com. So, Lisa, thank you very much for joining me.
Oh, I'm so glad to have been here. This was such fun.
Well, everyone, have a great weekend, and until Monday, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages,